It's got a death curse.
Don't bother me, be like me. And then who will help you up in the sewer?
Just like having a wart removed.
What's the boogeyman?
As a matter of fact, it was.
Is Tamara here?
No. No, you got the wrong house.
You sure?
Yes, the coterie of Midnight Intruders.
Yes! That's precisely what this movie
if
is.
If only they had a picture of Edith Piaf, they would have made it. Yet another nominee for most unfair cock block in horror history, too, by the way.
Yeah.
That was up there.
I saw a man at the back door, and he's wearing a mask.
What do you mean, like a ski mask? What?
No fucking mask! Okay, I don't know!
That's the formula right there. Can I make the viewers of this film care about these people so at the end, whether they triumph or fail, will I care?
He looks like a ghost. You really want something, people just don't stand up there staring at us like that. They want something.
She's gone.
Who the fuck are these three people, and how the hell did they level up to Michael Myers' lurking level?
We're not gonna fucking die here. We're gonna sit here. We're gonna wait for the fucking cops to come or whatever. I'm not gonna fucking die.
Stick your ass in a fucking corner and keep that gun trained on the only entrance to the room. That's the best you can do.
Don't get hung up on that there has to be a reason, because there's no reason.
Yeah, because they were home, Ryan. How's that for a fucking reason?
Why are you doing this to us? Because you were home.
Like, a cat won't kill the wounded bird immediately. It's going to bat it around and watch it flap around for a bit and bat it around a bit and sniff it and poke it and prod it and kind of like gnaw it. And then at some point it's just going to say, okay, I'm done playing with you, you're dead. And the next thing you're going to find is a dead bird in your shit.
This is Cash Wampum, your host of the Horror 101 Show, welcoming you back for episode 73. And we have a skeleton crew this evening. Nefarious Paul B was back in China for a visit. The cult sensation was incredibly busy moving networks around for his clients, because that's what he does when he's not here helping us educate your fears. So tonight, it's just myself, the world-famous Brian Stewart, and my wife, the lovely Nude. And after covering Oculus, we decided to keep things modern, cover a film that's been released within the last 10 years. This is a movie that Nude and I had seen, but World Famous had not. Plus, it has a sequel coming out very soon, so it's a perfect time to focus on it. Tonight, we're giving the Horror 101 treatment to Brian Bertino's The Strangers. But before we ran the microphone, the incredible Nude made us a fantastic dinner, and for those of you who aren't in the know, Nude can cook her ass off.
So, how was your day? Well, fuck the day, but it ended with chicken. It ended with chicken a la Nude, with stuffed with some delicious cheese, some mushrooms, garlic, and over it some sort of fucking delicious sauce. Don't know what it's made from, but there was salt, pepper, cream, thickening agent, parsley. The juices from the cooked chicken was absolutely delightful. With the asparagus that was cooked with I don't know what the fuck was in there, but it was absolutely incredible. Hey, Brian Stewart, weigh in here.
I liked the chicken.
Thank you, Brian Stewart.
It was good.
I'm looking forward to you seeing this. Like I said, it's been a while since I've seen this, but I really liked it.
It's home invasion.
Yep.
It's hard to believe that this movie, The Strangers, is 10 years old, because I think of this as a newish modern film.
Right.
But it's already a decade old.
I think for you and I, modern horror is anything since the year 2000.
08 was the days where instead of trying to make a new film, all the home invasion type movies were being made remade. I'm talking about Last House on the Left, I Spit on Your Grave. There's fucking three I Spit on Your Graves. Like, there's the remake and, yeah. And you know.
You know, I'm wondering if David Fincher didn't kind of re-spark the home invasion craze when he gave us Panic Room. Because that was the first real home invasion movie I'd seen in a long time. And then after that, you had a ton within the last 10 years. You've had... Your Next was another one. The Purge is kind of a home invasion.
Yes, absolutely. It is. Absolutely.
Yeah, Hush. Yeah, yep. Absolutely. Don't Breathe.
I think there's an argument that you could say that The Strangers reinvigorated that theme. Mm-hmm. It's like the granddaddy of the modern home invasion film.
Right.
Now, it was written and directed by a guy who does not have a lot of titles under his belt. He mainly writes drama. He always has a dark side to his story. He's like, I don't know why, but every time I write drama of any kind, it always is on the darker side. I'm comfortable there, I'm good at it, and that's where I am.
Right.
And that's fine. Brian Bertino, he wrote and directed this one, and apparently is inspired by true events. There's some something happened to this director that gave us this film. It's based loosely off a childhood event, not too profound, that happened to him. Right. He just kind of incorporated and embellished into this story right here.
See,
but
I would even go so far as to say movies like The Green Room have elements of home invasion, because it's people trapped in a isolated location from any kind of, you know, onslaught.
Yeah.
You know, right? You're being...
But, I mean, the thing about The Green Room is, like, they are in the spider's lair.
Yeah.
Whereas now the spider's lair is your own fucking home. And what is more terrifying than that? You know, like, you come home from a long day at work or after a long vacation or something, you know, you got your own pillow, you got your own pets, the smell, everything is familiar, you feel safe behind your own locked door. All of a sudden, you take that and throw it out the window. Now your own home is like the one place where you don't want to be, but you're trapped.
Yeah.
What do you do?
It'll be interesting to me to see what the set pieces are for suspense. For a good home invasion movie, you need to have enough time to get to know the players, mm-hmm. to have some stake in the family. There has to be a good reason for the home invasion. There has to be more to the story. And there should be some mystery to it as to why they're invading the home.
Well,
they better not just be a mindless group of thugs.
Don't get your hopes up, because this is a very questionable movie.
Okay, okay.
Very questionable.
So I have the elements from previous home invasion films, so I kind of have a sense of what I'd be looking for.
Right.
But who knows, it may surprise me. So I can't wait.
Hello?
What is it?
It's my phone.
Oh, my God.
We gotta get out of here. Then open the door, and I just want you to run, okay?
You were home.
I definitely had a Texas Chainsaw vibe early with the opening, though. I think that was a bit of an homage there.
You know what? I wouldn't have noticed this. Well, the Amityville house was easy, but if you notice, there was a house that went by that looked kind of like the Myers place, and there's a house that went by, didn't look a lot like 1428 Elm Street, but it had the red door. And when I think red door on front of the house, I immediately think Nancy's place, Nightmare on Elm Street.
Right.
And then it showed you the farmhouse, and they did that on purpose to show you houses that were reminiscent of other horror films. So
right.
They referenced Halloween, they referenced Nightmare on Elm Street, Amityville, and Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
911, what's your emergency? 911, what's your emergency? Are you there? There are people here. Okay, calm down. Where are you? What's your address?
I don't know.
Are you in danger?
Yes, yes.
What's your name?
Jordan.
Okay, can you tell me what street you're on?
I don't know where we are.
Jordan, who are you with?
We went in the house. We found people.
You found who, Jordan? Who did you find?
There's blood on the walls. Help us!
Jordan,
help
calm
us.
Down.
It's everywhere.
Jordan, what happened?
There's blood everywhere.
I like how they start this movie off with these two people coming home from whatever function, and you can immediately tell that they're on the outs. Something negative has happened, whether they were arguing or just got into a fight. She's crying and nobody's saying anything.
I have the sense that he proposed to her and she said no. That's the sense I got.
That's how it went.
That's exactly how it went.
Hey, Mike, it's me. We're at the house now. I know you're fucking drunk. Maybe you're asleep now, but I'll tell you when I see you. But things—they didn't work out the way I planned at all. I'm gonna need you to come out here and get me. Just whenever you wake up in the morning, I'm gonna give you the car. Just call me when you get this, okay?
So there is a backstory there that is interesting and makes the characters seem interesting. And that sense of somebody being emotionally damaged works well in creepy house movies. I don't know why that is, but it worked in The Changeling. It works in films and horror films who have more of a scarred backstory. You know, so
a bruised psyche during the events that are taking place.
It's almost like it invites trouble.
I'm so sorry it wasn't the way you thought it would be. Really sorry.
And what do we do now?
I'm just not ready yet.
Okay.
Do I care about them by the end of the film? That's the formula right there. Can I make the viewers of this film care about these people so at the end, whether they triumph or fail, will I care? That is the formula that you need to maintain throughout a film like this. Because if you don't care about anybody in the film by the end, it doesn't matter. You might as well just shut it off.
Is it like 4 in the morning?
Yet another nominee for most unfair cock block in horror history, too, by the way.
Yeah.
that was up there.
Because they're about to reconcile. They were about to reconcile the evening, and things
were... Or at least have one farewell fuck before...
I didn't get the feeling that things were over. I just get the feeling
I did.
They had planned to go away on a road trip.
On a road trip.
And he said, that's not a good idea. Mike was coming to pick him up, and you could take the car.
I got
that
a sense
could mean
we
need time apart. Maybe. That doesn't mean that they're over.
I don't think that's a relevant point at this point in time. But
everything's relevant, Helen.
But there's enough mystery
everyone just says
to their
that.
Story that... You know, we're engaged. We're engaged to these with these people, right? We want to know more about them, what makes them tick. We want to know more about their story. But it's an adequate hook, right? We care enough.
Hi.
Hello.
And who would unscrew the light bulb before they knocked on the door? That was an interesting piece of the puzzle.
Well,
so they wouldn't get a very good look,
they did,
right?
Obviously.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, right? There's some sinister intent there.
Is Tamara here?
No. No, you got the wrong house.
You sure?
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Okay, this is strange happenings. Because I've had people come to the door, oh, is somebody here? No, wrong place, sorry, okay. And you don't think much about it. 4 o'clock in the fucking morning in a neighborhood like that where there's no one, you're isolated, that's kind of strange.
Yeah.
And when, 4 o'clock in the morning, is Tamara here? No. Are you sure? It's like, what the fuck do you mean, am I sure? Yes, I'm sure. I live here. There's no Tamara here. Why are you asking that stupid question? The creepiness of her asking if he was sure and just standing there doe-eyed, not fazed.
And the fact
weird.
That there's a voice as well. It's not just a silent menace.
I'll see you later. That was weird.
Yeah. When people get lost out here. Should I go get her?
She seemed okay. I mean, I think she would have said if she wasn't.
The photographers did a good job of giving just enough light so that you could make out a few features, but like if you were to put that girl in a lineup, I wouldn't be able to pick her out.
Right.
Because there was just enough features just to show me that it was a short, blonde girl. I couldn't even tell you how old she was.
Yeah.
Young-ish. Dolph Lundgren-ish.
Yeah, if it had just been a silent slasher villain, I don't think it would have worked as well. They gave us just enough of that human element that it made it perfectly creepy.
Should we go outside?
Hello?
Is Tamara home?
You already came by here.
Are you sure?
But again, here's another film. Small cast, one setting, trapped, enclosed, claustrophobic. Did they do that well?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It works well as a technical exercise. I think it does all those elements well. And it doesn't want to tell any other story. So, I mean, it does very well what it set out to do. So I can't fault it for that.
James, where are you? That girl came back. That girl, I mean, she keeps knocking on the door. What do you mean? I heard her voice. No, I didn't open the door. How far away are you? Okay. Will you just stay on the phone with me? James?
The first appearance of a mask was well executed. When she's getting the drink of water at the kitchen sink, that is a long, patient, well-executed scene. When we realize that they've gotten into the house, rather effortlessly too, when that mask just materializes in the background and then halts and waits there. I like how patient that scene is, how he doesn't even advance. Just his presence there is enough to put us on edge.
Yeah.
And have her going about her business and getting the water. And then we know that when she looks around, he's not going to be there anymore. But from that point on, the rules of the entire movie shift. Because now we know they have access to the house. Now everything's different. She's no longer as safe as we thought. The house is no longer a safe haven. Everything's done. Right? So from that point on, the entire dynamic of the movie shifts.
Like, this house is not safe.
No, not anymore.
This house is a death trap.
That is a flawed idea. That doesn't work anymore.
Stop. Stop.
Come here. Sit down. Sit down, sit down, sit down, sit down. How do you know there's somebody out there?
I saw a man at the back door, and he's wearing a mask.
What do you mean, what do you mean? Like a ski mask? What?
I don't know. Fucking mask! Okay, I don't know.
Calm down.
Jimmy, I'm so scared.
Okay.
What I want to know is, who the fuck are these three people, and how the hell did they level up to Michael Myers' lurking level? Like, they're there, they're gone. They're there, they're gone. They're there, they're gone.
The you know, disappearing Batman act got a little, you know, over the top, especially in what appears to be the fall. A lot of foliage and dead and dry leaves and twigs on the ground. While they're moving around, you can hear creaks and cracks through the woods, but they can disappear, you know, in the middle of a field without a trace. In the amount of time it takes him to look away and back again, you know, it got a little too beyond the realms of believability. But I understand it's a horror film; it's part of the territory; it's part of the formula.
It looks like a ghost. When they want something, people just don't stand up there staring at us like that. They want something.
She's gone.
But you're like, yeah, there's definitely Michael Myers' level of lurking in this. There's quite.
It was
long.
Mostly the baby doll girl
who
had the lurking factor plus 73.
It's more the taunting aspect of the whole movie. And it, the one example was when he went to the car to retrieve his phone, and he's looking in after he sees it smashed, and she touches him at the back of the neck. And he's like, you know, all freaked out. He can't see it. So they're like almost, you know, poking them, you know, and to see if they're going to break. And it wasn't until they realized that he has a shotgun that it escalates to a more violent invasion, you know what I mean? It's more of like a, you know, ha 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 ha, we're going to rug you and kind of like just instill fear. But I don't think it would have escalated to that point if there was a shotgun. I think they would have just kept them and just bugged them for the whole night.
It didn't matter that the guy had a shotgun and 20 shells, and he shot at the guy through the door.
Yeah.
So at some point, like, most attackers would be like, okay, he's armed, we're out, right? Yeah. The guy's got a shotgun, we're out.
You hear the pump of the shotgun, that drives most people away.
And it's like, okay, we're out. We can't, like, there is a danger here, and they were not repelled.
We're not gonna fucking die here. We're gonna sit here. We're gonna wait for the fucking cops to come or whatever. I'm not gonna fucking die.
Stick your ass in a fucking corner and keep that gun trained on the only entrance to the room. That's the best you can do.
Hello?
Who did he shoot?
Mike.
Who's his brother?
Mark.
Well, what the fuck? I mean, why bother showing us that if Mark or Mike... Which one wasn't in the story?
Mark.
Helen, you find all of these elements. Yeah. You find everything. I was thinking, I thought it was his brother.
No.
That he called saying, come get me.
No, it was Mike. Mike helped him set up with the roses and everything. So.
Either way, he shot him and he didn't have a mask on. I thought the fact that you saw the guy roll up and his car was damaged and he approaches the scene where he knows something is wrong, I thought that was a mistake. I like the fact that you see him at the beginning of the film before anything happens. Okay, plans didn't work out. I need somebody. Come get me in the morning or whenever you get this, just come get me. I like that planted an idea in my head as the viewer. That somebody on the outside knows to come to that location. That's all I need.
That it gives you the time frame for help is on the way.
We knew he was going to get shot. Because The last time you see Liv Tyler and her fiancé there, he's got the gun trained in that hallway. The guy's going for the hallway. Obviously he's going to get shot. So, yeah, it sucked that they took out their only lifeline or their only hope of help. But I think it would have been a lot better had we not know that that help had arrived until after his face was all over the fucking wall.
Right.
I'm gonna go inside. I'm gonna hide somewhere.
What are you talking about?
There's an old radio out in the barn. I'm gonna try and call for help. I don't know what else to do.
They reference Friday the 13th Part 3. It's like, at that goddamn barn. Why is everyone drawn to the barn?
Because there might be a radio that might work in there, Brian, and that was their last hope, right?
Yeah.
Or there might be an outline of an axe that's no longer there.
Yeah, you know what? Every time I see a utility wall and there's an outline of a tool that should be there that's not, I immediately think of Evil Dead 2.
Yeah.
Because he goes through the chainsaw, he rips the curtain over, chainsaw, it's gone. But there's the outline of the chainsaw, and sure enough, here comes his... decapitated, undead, deadite girlfriend come busting in with this fucking thing just a running.
Thank God for all these anal retentive carpenters that just has to have a place for everything. Yeah. Or horror would be at a serious loss. It was a real roller coaster for me, and there are moments in there that are pure pants shootingly frightening, no doubt. Unfortunately, the movie ended for me the minute she fell and hurt herself. For the moment she had to crawl from place to place, the movie crossed a threshold for me to the point where I couldn't enjoy it anymore because they had removed all hope from the equation. The second it became utterly hopeless, it crossed into torture porn for me. It crossed that line where it's just now malevolence picking on a helpless person just to watch them squirm. And at that point, it crossed a line for me. So I think it was great up until that point. After that, the rest of the movie, the last half hour, it's like finding an injured dog at the side of the road and watching it whimper for half an hour before you crush it in its head. You know, or before you put it out of its misery.
Interesting analogy.
Yeah.
I wanted Brian to speak first because I knew exactly that he was going to go that. I knew he was going to like it up until that point. And for me, and I understand what you're saying, like the hopeless part, but I don't always, me personally, I don't always have to have a happy ending for a movie. I don't need it to be, oh, maybe they're going to have this chance. I'm okay with it because of the fact it's a movie.
Yeah.
And I'm okay that the fact that she never gave up. I'm like, whether she could walk or not. I mean, I just thought I enjoyed the whole aspect of it, and just, and it, and again, this doesn't make me a bad person, but the whole movie was hopeless, and that just kept me riveting.
Hope sank twice for me, when she injured herself and then when she was crawling back from the barn. After she got, the other one got up from the swing, and we see them just walking around. They're basically just circling around where she is. They're sharks circling the blood in the water at that point, right? And when they show that one shot of her on all fours in a big square of frigging light being emanated from the house, and at that point where they know where she is, she's not going anywhere, there's nothing she can do. It's that if she had crawled into darkness and kept crawling into the woods to get away, there may have been a glimmer of hope there.
Yeah, wait till sunrise, and if they can't find her in the dark, they'll just get up and walk and go away.
Exactly, but the fact she crawls into this bright big square of light in the middle of the yard that everyone's looking at, I'm like, that for me was like, and then it sank again. I'm like, oh, this is over.
Yeah.
She's no longer mobile. She doesn't have a weapon. She has to crawl around. She's utterly helpless at that point. She's pretty well prone.
Yeah, we don't know where the old man is.
Thankfully, it doesn't overstay its welcome too much after that point, but
a little bit more of the cat and mouse inside the closet there, where you think, okay, he's looking around. He's going to sit at the table, take a breather, get up and walk out. And you're thinking he's going to come in and give her the jump scare.
He looks right at her a couple of times, right? So he knows she's there.
She's in there. That's the only place she can be.
Gonna die.
Kristen, run! It reminds me of like a cat preying on a wounded bird. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, a cat won't kill the wounded bird immediately. It's going to bat it around and watch it flap around for a bit and bat it around a bit and sniff it and poke it and prod it and kind of like gnaw at it. And then at some point, it's just going to say, okay, I'm done playing with you. You're dead. And the next thing you're going to find is a dead bird in your shoe.
I want to change my favorite scene.
Helen's got something new. Okay.
My favorite scene is actually near the end when they dress them up in their good clothes. Their dressy, his suit, her dress, just to kind of, like you said, to mimic the joining. You know, they're going to be joined forever now because they're going to be dead in a second. So that the symbolism for that, and I think I was trying to think about it, and I think that's probably my favorite scene.
That was my idea.
I know.
Took my idea.
It's a good idea.
It makes sense to me. I mean, like, they could have just killed them right there. They could have killed them while they wanted these people awake and functional when they took their lives. You know, even more methodical.
Yeah.
So the whole thing, it's kind of a downer Debbie, but beautifully made.
Why are you doing this to us?
Because you're home.
Don't get hung up on that there has to be a reason, because there's no reason.
Yeah, because they were home, Ryan. How's that for a fucking reason?
Malevolently cat and mouse. That's what it seemed like. Like they were toying with their prey. That they weren't, and for the number of times we see them stalking them with axe or knife in hand, only to disappear at the last moment, means that they were thinking about it. That it was almost like kind of murderous foreplay. That they didn't want it over too quickly. Like they wanted to build to a certain point. Like it was almost sexual in the way they were. You know, they say serial killers kill because they are impotent, right? Because that they can't gratify themselves sexually, so they murder instead.
Yeah. You know what I'll give this film? For a modern horror film where we always complain like everything is spelled out for us, at least this writer in a modern horror film gave us another film where we've got faceless villains that we know nothing about. Even at the end of the film, we don't know who they are. We don't know what their motives were. We just know how sadistic they were.
Right.
We knew what their limits were and how far they were willing to go to
to conclude their campaign of terror. And it very much reminds me of the first Halloween, where by the end of the film, we were terrorized by this Michael Myers guy, but we couldn't tell you what he looked like. He didn't say a word. And at the end of the film, they were gone. He was gone, and so are they. They're off in their truck, like nothing fucking happened.
Yeah.
And we know that they're plotting to do this again by telling us the next one will be easier. They will do this again.
It'll be easier next time.
Let's score this motherfucker. Nude, go ahead.
I'm gonna give it an 8.
An 8 from you? Yeah.
I really, really liked it. And like I said, we watched a bit of it the first time, and then we watched it again. And then it's been a lot of years, like at least 6 or 7 years since we've seen it. And I enjoyed it even more this time around. And the whole movie just kept me on the edge of my seat. Some things I actually forgot. Like I said, my favorite part at the end, I forgot that they redressed them into their dressing
their
clothes.
Their evening wear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I really loved it. And a few jump scares and stuff, but I think it was needed. I don't think it was over the top. I really, really liked it.
Shit. I have to leave my phone in the car. I'm going to go get it.
You can't go out there.
Why?
One of them came in here and took my phone.
Brian Stewart?
You know what? For me, I'm going to get full marks for all the aspects I enjoyed, but I still think there's a huge chunk of what I would qualify as a movie missing from this. So it was fun. It was exciting. It held my attention. It did everything it wanted to do well, but there was just, like I say, that last act needed just a touch of hope, something, you know, for that last 15, 20 minutes. But I think for me, it's probably going to be a solid 7.
It's Mike. Listen, man, I'm outside. I got here early. I just decided to come out and, you know, just be here for you as soon as I possibly could, because, you know, how I like to wait on your hand and fucking foot.
I'll give it a 7.5 because I think it's a good film, but it lacks excellence. It's a solid movie. I liked that it had the balls to not give us a happy ending. I liked the villains. I like the hearkening back to the old supernatural, not explaining everything about the villains. Like, after the film, I've got questions about these people. I'm looking forward to a sequel.
Right.
And I hope that they have the balls to, at the very least, put the villains to the test in the next one. Because in this one, they were bulletproof, and they were entirely, they were almost supernaturally slick.
They were
slick.
Yeah.
They were bulletproof. Exactly. They were untouchable.
Yeah.
They were... Everything went perfectly for these people. I would like a scenario where they're challenged. And I'm hoping that we get that in the sequel, but who knows?
And that's the end of episode 73, featuring The Strangers, starring Liv Tyler and Scott Speedman, written and directed by Brian Bertino. Mr. Bertino did write the upcoming sequel, but it's being directed by someone else. After watching the trailer for it, there seems to be elements ripped right from the original, but I have a feeling the last half is going to abandon the claustrophobic setting and bring things out into open spaces. We'll certainly have to check that one out. I'm hoping it doesn't pull a Conjuring 2 on us and perform so poorly that it actually hurts the original. Again, this remains to be seen. We hope you enjoyed the show. Stay tuned for episode 74 coming next month. For the world-famous Brian Stewart and my wife, the lovely Nude, this is Cash Wampum saying thanks for listening and reminding you that there's a horror movie out there that's just going to scare the hell out of you, and we're going to help you find it right here at Horror 101. Educating your fears.
I'm putting you on notice that there's probably going to be a few films this year where you're going to need a shower when you leave the session. You know what I mean? You're going to feel unclean.